The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. It looks like the market offered what hockey fans would call a hat trick today, which meant that the three primary indices, the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ, all not only finished up, but finished at all-time highs. They broke their own closing records. Now, again, it's the first trading day in the month of June. Wall Street got ready for the release of monthly jobs reports. It'll be coming in tomorrow. A little speculation about that. A lot of other data running through the markets. And the Dow rose ultimately by end of trading up 135 points. That's a record at 21,144. NASDAQ gained 0.78%, also posting a record high. And the S&P rose 0.76%, also to an all-time high. Materials and healthcare were leading the advancers as sectors go. The healthcare sector reached its first 52-week high since March the 15th. Now, economists, polled by Reuters anyway, they expect the U.S. economy to have added about 185,000 jobs last month. But according to David Kelly, economist, a chief global strategist with J.P. Morgan Funds, he said expectations may have increased in the market after a pretty strong report from ADP, as well as Moody Analytics, which came in higher than that. Their Thursday report said private payrolls surged 253,000 for the month of May, which easily topped the consensus estimate of 185. Now, it was a very good positive surprise. According to the analysts, they believe they had a few negative surprises in the mix. So this is definitely moving against the current. In other words, normally, overall, according to Kelly, it says the economy is still moving along very nicely, in good condition. Now, the report from ADP and Moody's is often seen as sort of a preview to the U.S. government's official non-farm payroll report, which is set for release, as I said, tomorrow morning about 8:30 a.m. Now, Wall Street had a slew of data to digest today, including some weekly jobless claims, which came in right around 248,000, which was above the forecast of 239,000. The ISM Manufacturing Index for the month of May came in at around 54.9, just below an estimate of 55, but 54.9 is a pretty good number. April construction spending fell 1.4%. Economists were forecasting a gain of about 0.5%, so that's almost a swing of 2% there, unexpectedly. Auto companies, in the meantime, released monthly vehicle sales pretty much throughout the day. We're seeing a lot of different companies, and the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ are coming off pretty solid monthly performances for the month of May. So it's been a pretty good month overall. S&P and NASDAQ posted monthly gains of about 1.16% and 2.5%, respectively. Now, while the Dow rose about a third of a percent on the back of a subdued volatility environment, I mean, ultimately the larger of the indexes, which is the S&P and the NASDAQ, came in solidly higher. And those are more important numbers in real terms because they represent a much broader sampling. The CBOE Volatility Index, or the VIX, it broke below 10 six times this past month, the number 10, hitting levels not seen in more than 20 years. So the higher the VIX goes, the more volatility, the more risk, the more fear there is in the volatility index or in the market itself. The lower it goes, especially when it breaks below 10, it shows you that there's a very general consensus that there's very little fear among investors within the market. Now, analysts will try to predict what does that really mean. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Now, investors worry, of course, where there is worry, They worry that the relationship between decreasing volatility and increased purchases, that actually could morph from a virtuous cycle to sort of a self-fulfilling feedback frenzy, leading, of course, to a volatility-induced sell-off, which is, of course, what the naysayers would suggest. And you remember, in every cycle that I've ever seen, you've never had a situation where everybody is bullish and everybody is bearish. You've got people on both sides of that. No matter what the overall economic backdrop is, you're always looking at people who are on either side of the argument. And by the way, when they are asked to comment on their approach or on their opinions, they will offer you lots of reasons why you should be a bear, why you should think the market's going to go down. And we've seen that during periods where the market went up double digits for the year. Well, why would they be so, confident that things are going to be negative? Well, the main reason is they're trying to create a self-fulfilling prophecy because they're betting against the market. They're either shorting the market overall, which is a short trade strategy, or they're purchasing derivative investments such as futures contracts, like buying a put in the market, which is designed to make money for an investor when the market drops. So they're taking the negative side of things and, of course, maybe hoping to create some negative opinion if they're given the opportunity to do so on a cable TV network or a radio show. The extent of a potential downdraft, of course, on the market depends on just how large the risk parity investment community is. It's widely believed that the mass of money managed under a risk parity mandate remains fairly small right now, although it's a trend that's worth watching, according to a number of different analysts like Jack Ablin over at BMO Private Bank. Now, tech stocks were among the best performers as the sector continued to build on a pretty stellar year-to-date set of gains. Technology has gained nearly 20% as a sector right here in 2017. And like you said, we're barely halfway through the year. By comparison, consumer discretionary investing, which is the second best performing sector, it's up about 12%, that is. Now, most of the growth has come from, the large cap, the big companies that are in the growth category. According to Tom Martin, he's with Globalt, which is a portfolio management firm. It's still a momentum-driven market, according to him, that's a little bit skeptical about what they call cyclical trends. Now, in corporate news, shares of companies like Hewlett-Packard Enterprises had a little bit of downside pressure. It slipped more than 5% after the firm reported a pretty significant decline in quarterly sales. Marathon Petroleum approved an additional $3 billion to its shares repurchase program. So it's taking some capital and buying back shares within the company. And the reason a company would do that would be to try to enhance the value of the company overall. It's a strategy that works when companies do have extra money or when there's very cheap money available for borrowing within the open markets. They will either take that money and sometimes increase or pay out a high dividend or a higher dividend, or they will buy back their own shares. There is some concern in terms of the question of what's the message out there that companies and CEOs or CFOs are offering to the public when, in fact, their strategy is more concerned, in other words, about increasing the share price and making the stock of the company look more attractive rather than actually investing in the forward-looking growth opportunities of the company. In other words, taking that capital that's available to you and putting it into what we call CapEx, capital expenditures, or maybe even mergers and acquisitions, the purchase of new businesses and new companies that will allow an existing company to take advantage of either bigger market share or maybe even to allow it to morph into new businesses that complement the existing mainline businesses that they currently enjoy. That would show that the executive boardroom, the people making the top decisions, are really about the future, long-term growth of the company, and a little less concerned about the quarterly earnings numbers, which are going to affect the share price on any given day. The trouble is a lot of investors and, of course, boards of directors and shareholders meetings are held in a manner that really puts pressure on the primary executives to offer short-term extraordinary investment results as opposed to worrying about, well, what will this company look like 1 year, 3 years, or even 5 years down the road? Companies that currently, and there's still some out there that don't actually announce their earnings every quarter. They don't actually come out and do quarterly reports by design. Or companies choose not to go public at all. They do so because they may want to focus their attention on the actual future and growth of the company, the opportunities for the company, as opposed to worrying about meeting somebody's stock price deadline or expectations on a 90-day basis. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program. I am Don Sowa, and you're listening to AM 790. I'm delighted to have you with me on your safe, hopefully safe drive home. I will be right back with more Money Talk.
It's time for Dunkin' Donuts Regional Traffic, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. Say hello to the new frozen Dunkin' Coffee, real Dunkin' Coffee, blended frozen, creamy, and smooth. Try a small for $1.99. America runs on Dunkin'. Participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Coming to town on 6 right now, just ahead of 10, you're going to see a right side crash. That's backing things up for you on an already slow stretch. 295 southbound at 113 in West Warwick. Also a left side crash there backing things up. The crash near 37 and 295 has cleared on the northbound side. Things still slow for you there. 146 southbound still working to clear that crash up by 116 in Smithfield, causing some problems for you there. I'm Rich Tito with you right now, traffic.
Sponsored by the Detox and Treatment Helpline. Drug or alcohol problems for you or a loved one can be solved, and with insurance, treatment may be at little or no cost. Call the Detox and Treatment Helpline now, 800-430-4149.
With Dr. Jim Wilkinson of Seascape Lawn Care, Jim, I would imagine there are a lot of people who need to seed their lawn this spring. When exactly is the best time?
Generally, Dan, spring is not the best time to seed your lawn. Your soil is still very cold, and seed germination will be very slow. Along with your new seed, there'll be lots of weeds and crabgrass that will germinate that will be tough to control, and you'll not be able to put down crabgrass control in these areas if you seed in the spring.
Then when do you seed?
The best time to seed is late summer or early fall. The soil is warmer and the seed will germinate quickly. There'll be fewer weeds and typically there'll be more rain to aid in seed germination. Early fall is the best time of the year to seed.
Which just proves that you need Seascape all year round.
That is entirely correct, Dan.
Call Seascape Lawn Care today at 1-800-294-LAWN or online at seascapeinc.com.
It's your car. You take it to people you trust.
Don't rebuild or what, rip out your leg.
It's your finances. You want to go to the experts.
Cut your payments by 50%.
We've got to find a way to get out from under this debt.
We can help.
The National Foundation for Credit Counseling is a nonprofit organization that has been helping people for 60 years. Speak with a counselor today at 800-388-2227 or visit debtadvice.org. This is a public service campaign for the NFCC.
We've been angry.
We've been pressured.
We've been hopeless.
We've been lost.
We've been labeled.
We've been judged.
Let's face it, being a teen isn't easy. We know because we've been there.
Check out reachout.com to hear teens share their own stories on how they've made it through tough times. Because we've been there, we can help each other.
We've been determined.
We've been inspired.
We've been acknowledged.
We've been there.
We can help us.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Inspire USA Foundation, and the Ad Council.
This is Amy from Moriarty's Fence, the Invisible Fence brand pet safety experts. The Invisible Fence brand works for all dogs, all breeds, all ages. We start training puppies as young as 10 to 12 weeks old, and we also keep cats safe at home, too. The key to our 27 years of success is our customer service and pet training support. Our installed outdoor safety solutions start as low as $7.99 and can be customized for your property. Call 800-225-0808 for a free design and pet consultation visit, or schedule online at MoriartysFence.com. At Moriarty's Fence, we work hard so you can rest easy knowing your pet is safe at home.
But it just makes sense.
Moriarty's Fence, 800-225-0808, keeping pets safe since 1986. Moriarty's Fence reminds you to support your local shelter, adopt, volunteer, donate.
You wouldn't want your meal shipped from another continent. Why would you want your favorite radio station streamed from across the globe? That's why AM 790 created a super cool app that not only allows you to stream our best shows and music, but it also gives you access to great local deals like half-off top restaurants, concerts, and more. Just go to 790business.com and download our groovy cool app. Keep it local, keep it simple, keep it connected with 790business.com.
Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program, everybody. I am Don Sowa. Delighted to have you here listening on AM 790. You know, the big news all day, of course, everybody was waiting earlier on. I don't think that people were shocked or surprised, but you know how the president is. He likes to treat the drama out of Washington like it's a reality television show. So keeping everybody, at the edge of their seat, wondering what he's going to say about the Paris Climate Accord. He came out this afternoon shortly between 3 and 3:30 and made his big announcement to a group, very, very obviously a carefully chosen, very partisan group of people in the Rose Garden. His decision to exit the Paris Climate Agreement, obviously will be the subject of a lot of analysis. I'm sure part of it will be very political. And the people who are ultra-liberal on the issue of the environment and scientists, of course, and people who actually study the environment will probably be extremely critical of the president's decision and try to influence him going forward to have a more focused opinion on what the environment actually is, what's happening in it, and why we should care about it. I'm finding that a lot of the decision making taking place in Washington is a little bit like what a trader does on Wall Street versus what an investor does. Traders are look for an opportunity to make some quick money. It's the jump in, jump out, make a few dollars, invest less effort, less of their time in order to achieve the goal they have of actually winning in that little transaction. It's a transaction. And this government, this administration, is very transaction-oriented in a lot of their thinking. And getting away from politics, getting away from diplomacy, getting away from broad-based, what I call linkage-based decision-making, that tends to take on a very short-term transaction type of result. In other words, looking for the short-term result, looking for the short-term savings or profit, when in fact what's being ignored is the long-term. And that's where the arguments will play out here. And I'm sure you'll be hearing a lot of debate on this subject going forward between the scientists and the environmental community, as well as, those individuals who believe from a business perspective that pulling out of the Paris Accord was a good thing. I'm not really sure. Well, actually, I am pretty damn sure where the president gets his advice. And this particular decision had Steve Bannon's fingerprints all over it. There's no question about that. He's even touted himself as the ultimate disruptor, within the White House. Unfortunately, disruption is not always a good thing when the world is looking for some level of stability. The markets themselves, we've learned after many, many years as an investor and investment advisor, that the market itself and investors like stability. They like, it's not that they need things to be purely predictable, but they don't like things to be dramatically unpredictable, especially where those surprises turn out to be negative surprises. You're going to see, from the decision we saw today, you may see a little bit of a likely to, give up maybe a small and maybe an immediate lift to the oil and coal related stocks that are out there, which makes good on a campaign promise the president had made to support jobs in the coal industry, even though it's a dying industry based upon its own merits. But economists and energy experts warn over time the controversial decision to drop out of the international pact to help really stem climate change may hamper the nation's real ability to financially capitalize. So it's a financial decision to financially capitalize on the globe's shift towards renewable resources. The U.S. should be a dominant player in the development and, frankly, marketing and distribution of that technology. If we are going to minimize the role we play globally in this area, and this is something I'm sure the president will understand if it's presented to him this way, if he abdicates that role of leadership, well, someone else will pick up on it, including groups like Russia or China. Specifically, leaving the Paris Agreement jeopardizes the U.S.'s ability to be a leader, especially in the new clean technology developments, and sell those insights to a world that's hungry for cheap energy and clean energy. The biggest danger in leaving the accord also is you lose your seat at the table, so to speak, the negotiating table, for any and all climate-related talks that are going to come in the future. There's a lot of analysis, market-based analysis as well as economic-related analysis, and this analysis is talking about next-generation energy solutions, and the issue will be is will the U.S. be part of that or not? We may not even be part of the conversation. Now, if you're not able to negotiate bilateral agreements that can impact U.S. exports of your own leading-edge technology, then, of course, if you want to do that, you've got to have a seat at the table. Donald Trump, whether he wants to be using this announcement today or the idea of pulling out on the accord as a negotiating chip, you know, in the discussion, that's one thing. But you get to a certain point where other people just start losing faith that dealing with people of this mentality, you know, the one who's constantly trying to edge out the competition, as the president likes to do, that they may just decide that it's not worth negotiating with him at all. Now, his decision runs counter to the advice of some of his own closest advisors, and that includes his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and his daughter, Ivanka. It also flies in the face of some of the pleas he's gotten from everyone from Exxon CEO Darren Woods, the ExxonMobil's former chief executive, Rex Tillerson, who is now the president's secretary of state, and of course, even Rick Perry, who's the energy secretary for the president, who was the governor of Texas. These are all people who know an awful lot about the oil and gas and coal and other energy-related industries. They're some of the top leaders out there. Darren Woods, who's interestingly with ExxonMobil, wrote the president asking him to keep the U.S. seat at the bargaining table. He also had conversation with by the phone, I believe, yesterday with Elon Musk, who's the CEO of Tesla, who has made good, as it turns out today, later as the afternoon went on, made good on his promise. He vowed to quit the president's economic councils. He's on three different councils providing advice and commentary to the president, and he has been over the last several months. He said that he would quit those councils if he, in fact, opted out of the Paris Accord, and apparently he has chosen to do that. Does the president care? Who knows? It's hard to say. Even the American Petroleum Institute, which represents fossil fuel interests in Washington, and did not really take sides in the fight over the Paris Accord, has, in fact, called the accord a missed opportunity to talk about how the United States is leading the world in the production and refining of clean oil and natural gas, new technologies in those areas, and leading the world in reducing carbon emissions. He said they felt that there's a story to be told here. And if you, again, you pull out of the accord, you paint simply a negative view of everything, and it limits your ability to show off the accomplishments you've already achieved. In making the announcement today, the president seemed to leave the door open, maybe. Again, that's part of that whole way he likes to negotiate, the art of the deal. Open the door to joining into some sort of a modified global group, you know, and maybe a different kind of accord that he feels may be a little bit more economically favorable to the United States. But either than that, you know, we're getting out. That's the bottom line that the president offered in his White House ceremony today in the Rose Garden. But we will start to negotiate, he says, and we will see if we can make a better deal, a deal that's fair. And if we can, he goes, that's great. And if we can't, well, so what? I mean, that's his attitude. I think it betrays an underlying attitude of the president that suggests that he has gotten some very, very bad counsel and advice from individuals who simply don't believe that global warming and the environment are, in fact, a problem. All you need to do is talk to anybody who lives in coastal areas, even down along the Gulf Coasts, and, of course, even in the areas around Florida. you know, they would actually, I heard a conversation earlier today with a gentleman. I believe he's a mayor of a major city or town in southern Florida, and he was talking about the fact that between where he, you know, between his township and his people, is of course the Everglades, and the Everglades is a major environmental place, not simply a place where you can go for tourists to see alligators. But what happens was, as the ocean levels increase, you have warming. What happens is a lot of the salt water from areas in and around the panhandle, you know, move into the Everglades, and it disrupts the content of the fresh water there. Makes it problematic for drinking water, for fresh water there. But also the ecosystem changes as well, and that's a very, very diverse ecosystem that's critical to the health of certainly of regions in and around Florida, as well as the Gulf Coast. Folks, I'm Don Sowie, listening to AM 790. Just trying to pass on to you some of the learned information that we have about the environment and about global warming and about, well, things that are happening in Washington that affect us and that will affect us in the future. And if not us directly, certainly our children and grandchildren. We'll be right back talking about money and finance on AM 790's Money Talk.
Kessler Foundation, we improve quality of life for people with brain and spinal cord injury, MS, stroke, and other disabling conditions. Our discoveries help people reclaim the ability to walk, drive, remember, and communicate, skills needed for greater independence. Explore how Kessler Foundation changes the lives of people with disabilities at kesslerfoundation.org. That's kesslerfoundation.org. Discoveries that change lives.
I want to be a rock star. Being a rock star is cool. You get to play really loud.
Could be loud as your job.
If your child is sick over and over again, it could be PI, a defect in the immune system that affects millions. Early detection can give children a chance to dream.
Jeffrey Modell Foundation, 25 years of helping children reach for their dreams. Visit us at info4pi.org or call 1-866-INFO4-PI.
Stinky dog away from me.
Bad breath and bad gas.
Petey stopped eating. All his hair fell out.
Itching, licking, missing fur.
At least $5,000 in vet bills.
Creams, antibiotics, sprays.
No results.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite. DINOVITE.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Her coat is not soft. It's silky. It's healthy and shiny and glossy.
She's got life. She's got energy.
Tons of energy. No more bad smell.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Dynavite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
Here's an urgent message from Agora Financial.
Most of the tiny penny stocks operating in the newly formed marijuana markets are garbage. That's the truth of it. But there are a few that have a legitimate chance of becoming blue chip marijuana firms. And that's certainly the case for one 25-cent marijuana player that we've analyzed. Why? Because it was recently revealed that they are expected to deliver the best quarter on record to shareholders. All segments of operations, construction, wholesale, and retail are being reported as profitable and self-sustaining. And they could be getting ready to deliver some really big news. Shares could soar in the near future. Once the mainstream media begins covering this story, it could send share prices screaming higher. Go to profitfrompot.com to find out how you can legally stake a claim in the best of the best that the industry has to offer. If you don't, you'll probably regret it for the rest of your life. Go to profitfrompot.com. That's profitfrompot.com.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the second half of tonight's Money Talk program. Everybody, I'm Don Sowa. Thanks for tuning in. You know, the whole world of energy, you know, we talk about it even here on the Money Talk program as we run down sectors of the market that did well or will do well. Prices, the prices of technology, the price of things like oil and gas and the price of coal, these things all go into whether or not a particular sector is going to do well or not. So, you know, you've got to be thoughtful and you've got to be aware of that. Now, again, right now, the politics out of Washington has been driving the markets an awful lot. And the president has offered some opportunity out there. Investors have kind of jumped on board the what we call the speculative political bandwagon. You know, and right now the markets are up higher than they would normally be barely halfway through the year. Now, this goes into that category and where you used to hear the old adage, you buy on the rumor and sell on the news. I think that it's more a better explanation to say people buy on speculation and then they sell on reality, meaning they speculate about what could happen, what might happen, based on political campaign promises. Donald Trump made a lot of promises, some of which deal with economies, some of which deal with reform of regulation. Some of them could have a fairly positive impact on markets that you could invest in. The real issue is going to be whether the political reality will support the expectations we might have or the speculation. So people try to get in quickly. They jump in and they figure, well, if there's a lot of deregulation in the financial services sector, then financial stocks would be the place we'd want to be and want to own the banks maybe or maybe some of the investment firms or the insurance companies. And that makes some sense. I can get that. I said if you are looking for – if you think that the a change in regulation may improve or cause gains in value in for oil and gas companies, well, that would be another place that you could trade publicly in. If you are worried about what can happen with price controls or things of that sort on the healthcare side, well, then you may want to get out of your healthcare-related or pharmaceutical company-related stocks. Again, we don't know that that's the case going forward. What has happened ultimately is I think the president has been surprised. I think that he believed that a large number of the Republican House and Senate will just kind of line up behind him and back a great many of the proposals that he believed or at least he perceived were very, very popular when he was out on the campaign trail, and he saw the large crowds and the way they reacted to some of his suggestions and some of his ideas or some of the ideas that he was publicly embracing. And he says, well, if this is that popular, then it should be easy to push these things through. Well, you find out that, number one, pushing some of these things through was very, very complicated. And he has said that himself, especially when you're dealing with issues like health care. I don't think there's any argument. I think in most policies, you're going to find some truth in almost every statement you hear. The question is, how much truth? Is there a need, for example, to reform, make changes in, reform the existing healthcare system? I think that most anyone listening to this show would probably say, yeah, there's a lot of reasons for us to examine carefully, debate thoroughly, evaluate and make changes where we can that will certainly bring the cost of healthcare down. There's lots of ways that it can be done. Not everybody agrees on all of them. The political side, it turns out to be a lot more difficult than people would think. And, of course, the president thought this would be an extremely popular thing, given the reaction he got out on the trail, so to speak, during his campaign. But then he gets into Washington and discovers even within the Republican Party there are a lot of different views, not on reforming health care, but different views on how it should be done. Is repeal and replace Obamacare the right way to approach reform in the healthcare system? Some people think so. Some people don't. But some people agree that there is a need for change. The trouble is if you take one extreme side or the other extreme side, then you miss the logical area where there's potential for agreement somewhere right smack dab in the middle, in the center. Most Americans are not extreme liberals or extreme conservatives. Most Americans are moderates. Politicians have to figure that out at some point. Maybe if they do, they would realize that they can get a lot more done. But I guess that's asking a lot. Most of you and I and most of us are not politicians, and maybe that so we look at the world in much too logical a fashion. But clean technology, that makes sense. We're pretty good at that in the U.S. It's really kind of unstoppable from an economic perspective, you'd think, part because you'll likely see continued support of a great many companies, at least on the state level, for clean technology growth. You'll see continued growth in this area because it'll be the cheapest energy available when it comes right down to it. So even if the U.S. government gets out of a climate accord, individual states as well as individual cities have already expressed a willingness and perhaps a commitment to continue a great many of the features of that original Paris Climate Accord. In the short run, withdrawing from the accord will negate the impact of some possible carbon emissions fees on gas and electricity costs out there, says a number of different economists. And Mark Zandi, who's chief economist of Moody's Analytics, he notes that the decision will likely slow job losses in areas of fossil fuel industries, such as coal, as well as job gains in renewable energy sectors such as solar and wind. So there's a double impact on it. But according to Zandi, employment in the coal industry already has been shrinking over the years, in part because natural gas has become a much cleaner, much cheaper power source. So there's a practicality thing here. It's not just about saving jobs. It's about trying to create or save jobs that are in demand. So renewable energy already has seen job growth, partly as a result of state mandates and lower prices that have encouraged a great many homeowners to actually install things like solar panels on their rooftops, for example. I mean, everybody wants to be a little bit more efficient. Everybody does. Nobody wants to feel foolish. Most of us want to feel we're doing as the best we can and the most logical thing we can for ourselves, for our pocketbooks, and yes, for the future of our children and grandchildren. We want to do it healthy if we can. As a result, the short-term effect on U.S. employment likely would amount to just, perhaps several thousand additional jobs in a nation that employs more than 140 million people. Now, why would you try to help the coal industry while reducing investment in future energy such as solar, wind, and other energy storage, in other words, renewable energy jobs? Mike Phillips says this is just crazy. He's a CEO of a company called Sense, S-E-N-S, S-E-N-S-E. Now, that's a maker of high-tech power measurement devices for smart homes. Job creation in the renewable energy area, according to guys like Phillips, dwarfs jobs in the coal industry, which was an obsession with Donald Trump during the campaign for some reason. Somebody planted this in his head. Citing a Department of Energy report in January that notes that the coal industry employs about 160,000 people in the United States, and it's shrinking. While jobs are growing in areas of energy efficiency, 2.2 million jobs there, jobs in natural gas production, 200,000 jobs there, jobs in solar, 374,000 jobs there, as well as the growing areas in wind technology, about another 102,000 jobs there. The numbers support the areas in this clean energy, renewable energy category. Whether you are thinking of the health benefits of that or not, this is a jobs decision. It seems like that's what the president is most concerned with, is how do all these decisions affect jobs? Domestic job growth issues aside, economists like Zandi say that the Trump's decision makes it less likely that the United States will be at the forefront of clean energy innovation in the future, and that could possibly cost the country as many as hundreds of thousands of jobs over the next decade or two. We're not going to lead the way as we had the opportunity to do so before, and that may be a big issue. Now, economist Zandi also cautions about a ripple effect of climate change that could actually have another huge economic impact, namely stronger hurricanes occurring, flooding, higher water levels as you have melting of glaciers and other areas up north and along the Arctic, catastrophic events, things that destroy homes and businesses, temperature control. We've had the last couple of years in a row, we've had extraordinary, unusual weather in the United States, and some of that caused massive, we haven't seen forest fires like we've seen the last couple of years. And this could cost the economy hundreds of billions of dollars over the coming decade. But mostly, Withdrawing from the Paris Accord, according to these experts, represents a dangerously isolationist stance at a time when this planet feels like an increasingly interdependent ecosystem. You're coming into this environment at this time and saying, I don't want to deal with the rest of the world. And is that really a solid, a healthy, reasonable, and intelligent thing to do at this time? Folks, I'm Don Sower. You're listening to the Money Talk program. We're commenting on the news of the day, things that affect you and me, our pocketbooks, and maybe our health. I'll be right back with more of the Money Talk program.
It's time for Dunkin' Donuts Regional Traffic, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. Say hello to the new frozen Dunkin' Coffee, real Dunkin' Coffee, blended frozen, creamy, and smooth. Try a small for $1.99. America runs on Dunkin'. Participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Crew still working to clear that crash on 146 southbound. A very, very slow go in either direction up by 116 in Smithfield. As we come in on 10 southbound, trying to get over to 95, we are heavy and backed up all the way between 6 and 95 right now. Coming in on 6 eastbound, you're going to find a crash right ahead of 10 that has you backed up. The crash on 295 south is cleared. Things still sluggish and slow coming down from Johnson all the way down to the 95 merge. I'm Rich Tito with your Right Now Traffic.
Sponsored by the Knee and Back Pain Helpline. Learn how an insurance-covered comfortable knee or back brace can reduce your pain. Call 800-888-KNEE, 800-888-KNEE.
Last time you had a chat with your daughter, what did you talk about? Clothes, her friends? Well, here's something else I'm discussing with my daughters. The connection between some types of HPV, the human papillomavirus, and cervical cancer. A cancer diagnosed in thousands of women each year. And if you're African American, you may be at higher risk. But it can be prevented through screening. Talk to your doctor about HPV and cervical cancer and visit MakeTheConnection.org. Sponsored by the Cancer Research and Prevention Foundation and the Step Up Women's Network.
John Bennett was paralyzed by a sniper's bullet in Iraq.
It shattered two vertebrae and fractured another one.
John's wife, Dina.
Paralyzed Veterans of America got us our benefits.
Senior National Service Officer Michael Killen.
I hand-carried the forms over to the VA and walked them through the system.
You're just trying to survive, and they help you along the way.
To learn more about Paralyzed Veterans of America, visit PVA.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Ew, get the stinky dog away from me.
Bad breath and bad gas.
PD stopped eating. All his hair fell out.
Itching, licking, missing fur.
At least $5,000 in vet bill.
Creams, antibiotics, sprays.
No results.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E .com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Her coat is not soft. It's silky. It's healthy and shiny and glossy.
She's got life. She's got energy.
Tons of energy. No more bad smell.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Dynavite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E .com.
This is Money Talk with Don Sower, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome you back to tonight's last segment of the Money Talk program. I'm Don Sower. Thanks for tuning in tonight during your drive home. You know, it's funny. I started the Money Talk program 26 years ago, and I did it at that time. I mentioned this on more than one occasion. I did it because there was not a lot of financial news out there. Not so much news, but financial talk, where people could, you know, get some basic information, basic ideas, learn some of the fundamentals of investing, and use that information either to help formulate intelligent questions you could use to make better decisions, or to get you started on the process of becoming a well-informed investment decision maker yourself. But it's amazing today. I mean, you have so many different outlets that you can turn to for information and thought. There's a lot of radio shows. We were one of only two or three shows on in the country when we started the show back in 1991. Now they're everywhere. But and that's fine. And there's people out there that, and I've heard some of them, and have thought some of them are pretty insightful. Some of them are simply, well, some of the, again, it's personalities, right? Some hosts are simply easier to listen to. And I get that, too. Personalities do matter in addition to base knowledge. But you think with all the information that's out there coming at light speed, you know, in 10 different directions, that the myths that seem to be out there that permeate the investment world, you think those myths would disappear, but they don't. So I was just thinking of a couple of them because I had some people off the air asking me some questions. And I says, wow. I said, these are among those myths. For example, there are people that believe that the stock market ultimately is riskier than the bond market. The stocks and bonds are very, very different. But over time, you'd be surprised at you know how stable they can be. It's understandable that investors would actually believe that myth. Stock market seems to be volatile, especially if you look at it on a short-term basis, day-to-day, month-to-month, or even sometimes year-to-year. However, on a long-term basis, the U.S. stock market has been remarkably consistent. A lot of people don't care to study it that way. And maybe that's why advisors, when they talk to you about your risk tolerance and how much risk you should be taking, not looking at your age so much, but how much time you have before you're actually going to need the money. Since the year 1926, the rolling 30-year average, if you look at every 30-year period rolling from 1926, the average annual return of the S&P 500, which is just the largest 500 companies in the market, it has stayed in the, it has performed in that 8 to 15% range nearly the entire time. Again, different period, again, but it's a 30-year rolling average. Why has the average investor enjoyed an 8 to 15? No, absolutely not. Why? Because during those years when the market was down or even negative, the investor responded to that by pulling the money out, not realizing, not considering, not admitting that this money was not short-term money. They reacted with a decision that was a short-term decision. Yeah, pull the money out like you needed the money tomorrow or like you needed the money next year. But instead, it was still money that you weren't going to use for 20 or 30 years. But because you didn't give the money the time frame to enjoy the rolling periodic 20-year or 30-year average annual return cycle, then you missed out on what were the rather substantial recovery years that would always follow the down year. Whenever you have a down year in the market, especially if it's a full-blown bear market year, like a 20% decline, and we've seen some of those, and certainly since I've been doing the Money Talk program, we've seen plenty of periods in which the market dropped more than 10%. But one of the things we also have found is when you have a period where the market drops 15, 20%, the years that follow, not the one year, but the multiple years that follow, it's like a pendulum. It swung too much to the left, but it will, because of momentum, swing back just as aggressively. But what difference does it make if the market recovers in the year that follows a bear market if you're not in it? And that's why the average investor doesn't enjoy that 8 to 15% number that I quoted you from statistics. While investment-grade bonds, interestingly enough, they can be extremely low risk, yes, lower risk in some cases, so can a diversified portfolio of high-quality blue-chip stocks. The one difference is you're going to give up a sizable amount of potential return to enjoy the lower level of risk you may have in a designed stock portfolio. Again, diversification does matter. Now, that's just one of the major myths that are out there. Another one is that, that your money is safe if you're working with a financial professional. Now, I don't know that that's a myth. I've heard some people try to market it like, you know, working with a financial advisor, a professional, a person who's been working for a long time, like somehow, put it this way, it doesn't provide any guarantees. Many financial advisors may have more knowledge than you do, but that's the job that they do. This is the career they've chosen. Maybe they went to school for it. Maybe they went on to get advanced degrees, advanced credentials. I hope they did. And by the way, if you're choosing a professional, yes, you should be asking about those things. You know, what is your background? What kind of investment portfolios do you manage? And more importantly, what kind of clients do you work with? Why would you ask that? You'd ask that because you want to know, are you somebody who serves as an advisor people like me? You know, if you work with people like me, then the chances that the advisor will understand people like you is better, right? Now, I mean, granted, as with all things, Not all advisors are created equal. I have a bias, but as a professional advisor myself, I chose my direction, my education, the CFP and AIF credentials as a fiduciary. I chose that route because I thought that was, yes, the best route for me as a professional, but it was selfishly a route that I thought the average investor, the average consumer would find valuable. I wanted to be in a profession that would matter, a profession that would help people, a profession that would be important to people who don't know as much about these issues as I educate myself to know. But it's a process that's a continuing education. Not all advisors are created equal. It's up to you as the consumer, as the person with the money, to do your homework, to talk to not just one advisor necessarily, and very importantly, to end up committing to a relationship with an advisor that, number one, understands you. You have to feel that they understand you. Someone who you understand. Do they speak in English? Plain English, meaning not being ethnic, but do they in fact speak in a manner that you can understand? And are they, you know, do they try to educate you, not simply impress you? I've always said, you know, 5 and 6 syllable words do not make money for you, and quite frankly, may have you walk away more confused. Now, the Department of Labor fiduciary rule, which you've been hearing a lot about, and we'll probably hear some more about going forward. Based upon that, financial advisors, you know, are going to be following a set of criteria that deals with the issue of disclosure. But there are a lot, they call the fiduciary rule because there are people like who are investment advisors who've accept a standard of fiduciary liability, a fiduciary standard on your behalf to commit to doing what's in your best interest. There are plenty of people out there who are advisors who've been committed to that fiduciary rule for a very, very long time. But now there's going to be a new group, if they want to stay in the profession, who'll have to do so as well. But do your homework. Don't trust everyone. And remember, in the end, let the buyer beware is still an applicable and appropriate deal. We'll try to help you out and be happy anytime you ask to answer questions for you here on the Money Talk program. In the meantime, have a good night. I'm Don Sowa. This is Money Talk.